4:55, September 16th. I'm starting a new reminder. I'm going to put this thing on the table in front of me in hopes that I remember to start it instead of putting it in my pocket, at least until it started. All right. So later today, we're going to talk through the next assignment, which I have here to hand out. That will be the first sort of programming project assignment, and it's going to be on the stuff that we've talked about over the last couple of days, just basic socket programming, just get it working sort of thing. Before we do that, I want to ask first if there are any questions from before. All right, so. So I'm going to review again, now putting some actual sort of C code structure around the system calls, and then move on and talk about the so-called forking server pattern, which is one of the sort of coding styles that you can use to get around this limit that the server can only deal with one thing at a time. So that's the plan for today. Let's see if I can make this work. We've switched to Linux as the system of choice for today for the display, and we'll see how it works. I was getting very unhappy with Windows and the way it was working. Okay, so the single server pattern. This is what we've been talking about, and we'll just go over it really quickly. Whoa. Let's fix that. Mute the microphone. Mute everything. Okay, so get a socket with a socket system call. And, you know, the parameters certainly matter, but there's something you go look up. We bind that socket to an address. We listen on the socket. And then enter a loop governed by some Boolean condition of some sort. You know, what it is will depend on what the server is. But while still serving, what do? We accept a connection, which means getting a new socket. Based on the existing listening socket, and then while still talking to the current client, send and receive. And ultimately, let's remember something else here. When you finish talking to that client, you should close S2, and finally close S1. All right. Nothing simpler. It gets to be second nature, right? As you do this thing. Any questions about that one? Understand what every one of those system calls does. Yes, that's one thing that this thing is not so good at. Is adding pages. So, if I ask you, what does accept do? What's the client doing when the server doesn't accept, for example? What is the action on the client that allows the accept system call to finish?
Connect.
Exactly. Okay? So, and what is the action on the client that allows a receive system call to finish on the server? Send. Sure. Okay? So things come in pairs. So let's look quickly at the client. Just to reinforce that. Starts out just the same way. But then instead of bind and listen, we do connect. S1 to the server address, and while still talking, send or receive, close S1. So the client is a little bit easier, but the server is not complicated. All right, so all the rest is details, important details, and that's the purpose of this next exercise, is to sort of work through those details, okay? And use the book that you got, and you'll be fine, and the notes from last time. Okay, so we said that that this... Can I go back? Sure. So we said that the server pattern is deficient in that it only lets the server service one client at a time. And think about what would be going on that would make that so. When the server is receiving in a receive call, what's it doing? It's sitting there doing absolutely nothing while the client does whatever it's going to do. Right? So the receiver computer, if the server computer is sitting there, and the only thing it's doing is being that server, then it's basically wasting all its time, and we'd be better off to be able to support multiple clients. So one of the ways to do that is with the so-called forking server pattern. So this is... This is the next So how's this going to work? So generally speaking, the idea here is that we will create a process to handle each client separately. And there are just sort of a few tricks associated with that I want to show you, because again, this is something that crops up over and over again. One of the things that you have to remember, especially on Unix platforms, is that whenever you fork a process, you have to wait for that process to finish at some point, or you just pile up a whole bunch of zombie processes, right? That it consume resources and do nobody any good. So that's one of the things that we want to work out here. So here's how we go. So we start out with no children. And we're going to start out just the same. The basic listening socket is just the same as before. So S1 gets socket. Bind one. Listen. Press one. And now the fun begins. Well, not quite yet. Except of S1. Let's go ahead and put that in. Now the fun begins. Because now that we've got a connection to a client, we can create a new process to handle that client. So if okay, in the if branch, if fork equals zero, so which process is this, the parent or the child? This is the child, right? The parent gets the child's ID. In the child, we have no further use for the parent, for the listening socket, so we can close it. The parent keeps it open. The parent still has it available, but the child doesn't need it. So for this process, we'll get rid of it. Remember that diagram we did when we first started talking about sockets, about how there were file descriptors and multiple processes could refer to the same socket. Right. So close the association of the child process with the listening socket. While still talking to client, the client send or receive. Okay, and when we're done, simply close S2. Okay? And what happens when the child gets to the finishes closing S2? It's done, right? That's the last thing in the child code. So it finishes. In the parent, so this is the parent process now. I'm going to be a little bit paranoid and put an explicit exit in there. Otherwise, we can go on running things that we shouldn't be running. Okay, parent closes S2. It's not going to interact with the child at all, with the client at all. It's done with S2, so go ahead and do that. Let's label this as child. Okay, we created a new child. Yes?
Should we close that S1, the line that is 80?
This one? No, this is still in the child. So the child is interacting on S2 with the client. When it's finished doing that, it closes S2.
Close the parent?
Pardon?
Close the parent? S2 is the parent?
No. S2 is a socket. S1 and S2 are sockets. The processes are this bit of code and this bit of code. Okay? Don't confuse process with socket. Okay? So in the child process, that is this bit of code, we have no further use for S2 because we're done interacting with the client. So we close S2 in the child process.
So the S1, when you say for equals 0, close S1, that means close the server socket?
This closes the listening socket in the child. Right? The open and close status of the sockets is independent between the two processes. So when we close S1 in the child process, it doesn't affect the parent process. The parent still has S1 available. Okay? Now, and similarly, in the parent process, starting here, right after the fork, we close S2 because the parent isn't going to use S2 anymore, but the child keeps using it up here. Okay? Yeah, Deandre?
So the fork doesn't send the child on a parent process to wait, the parent process keeps going?
That's right. Okay, so this is why 360 is an important prereq for this class. When we use the fork system call, we end up with two processes running at the same time. Right? Excuse me. The first one, called the child, is the one that gets 0 back from the fork system call. And it goes off and does whatever it's going to do in this code that comes here. Meanwhile, the parent keeps running here. Yeah? Boring?
So the 0 means accelerate. For equals 0, mean the child process will create successfully.
Okay, so I have not put any error handling in this code. Okay? So in the fork system call creates these two processes. Let's go on and get another page. I'm feeling that we need to go over this. New page after. Okay. Let's just call it ID. So we're chunking along through some code, and we get to this fork system call. And it now creates two processes. In the child process, ID is equal to 0. That's an assertion. Okay? And in the parent process, okay, so that's the one thing that's different after the system call to fork. The return value from fork in the child is 0. The return value from fork in the parent is the child's process ID, which is not 0. Okay, and then the code after that point, the code here or here, gets to test that value and see whether it's the parent or the child code. Okay? This is...
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay? All right. So we can go back. Okay. So you see that's what we did here. We tested the return value from fork. If it was 0, then this is the child process. Otherwise, we're out here. It was non-zero. It's the parent process. Okay? So the parent has to do this thing of keeping track of its children and eventually getting rid of them, and that's what this next little loop does. not repeat. Reap. It's called reaping. Sound like the Grim Reaper. Well, child count. So a new system call, wait PID. Let's spell that, jeez. Try this again. And finally, let's see if I got room here. Well, okay. Oh, there's a missing, darn it. Erase that. There's a missing paren for, or brace before the close S1. It's now too hard to see. Doesn't all fit. Let's do this. Okay, so now you won't be able to read it because it's too small. But I can point out with everything visible that this brace here matches that while. So it's only after we're done with the while still serving loop that we close S1. Okay? And in the parent, so this is parent code here. Notice that we do, we close the S2, then we do this reaping thing. We do it every time we successfully fork a server. You don't have to do it that often. You just have to do it every once in a while. So that you don't pile up a lot of zombie children. And then I need to show you, I need to zoom this up again so I can show you about wait PID. So the only other thing of interest here is how do we reap the children? Well, there's the system call wait, which is a system call that says, wait for one of my children to finish and tell me about it. Wait PID is a sort of enhanced version of that. And the key thing here is that we pass it the no hang flag, which says, try to wait for a child, but if none are dead, then just go on and tell me about it by returning zero. There are no dead children. And if that's the case, we break out of this loop so we can go back to serving. Okay? But if there are still children, we will have waited for them, they go out of zombie status and finally disappear. Right. Everybody with me on that? So, this is just a silly little thing you have to do in Unix because they decided it was more important to have children hang around and tell you about their status than to automatically go away after a while. Okay. So the other thing to say about all this code, I will reemphasize, is that this is simplified in that it doesn't deal with error conditions. Okay. So every system call, the socket, the bind, the listen, the accept, the fork, the close, all of them should be protected by if statements that if they return a negative value, say that an error has occurred. And for this class, at least for this first assignment, the appropriate response to an error is to print out a message and exit because it shouldn't be happening, right? If you're getting errors, you should fix them. Okay? Questions about this? So the first assignment doesn't actually use this pattern, but I wanted to go ahead and do it now because it sort of fits into the overall scheme of talking about patterns. All right. So, where is the assignment? So let's take a look at this together. Yes, sir.
Do you have an extra one?
Oh, I thought I gave an extra one. Maybe not. Okay, so the sort of backstory of this assignment is not terribly credible, but it will at least get you sending and receiving some data over socket. We have a client and a server process. You can run these on the same machine. They don't have to be on different machines. You will have to come up with the way of addressing the server from the client, and there are sort of two appropriate ways to do that. One is to pass the name of the computer, and the other is to pass its IP address. And we'll talk a little bit more in a moment about how to turn a character string, name, or IP address into something that you can pass as a struct sock adder in, which is what you need for the connect call. So you'll pass the name. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, that's different. Well, I guess I'm just going to have to point because I can't highlight here. New tools. Sorry. You'll specify on the command line the name and the port on which the server is listening. Okay, so you'll have started the server first. It will be on some machine. You'll code into your server code parsing of the command line to get the port number, and that same port number then has to be passed to the client. So it knows where to connect to it. I wish I could write here. What macros are you familiar with and functions for processing command line arguments in C? Get args? Okay. So use get args. All right. To handle the command line arguments. That should be fine. Okay, so the server starts first, you tell it the port number, the client starts next, you tell it the host and port number. So, this is a so I've defined a bit of a protocol now for interaction between the client and the server. This is a protocol in which the server sends the first message. So the client connects, and the very first thing that happens then after the server gets that new socket from it, return from its accept call, is that it sends a message to the client. All right? And it sends a particular message. So the client has to receive that message before it does anything else. After receiving the message, it prompts the user sitting at the terminal. Okay? So we got a little bit of standard in, standard output I/O going here on here along with the socket I/O. Prompts the user for a number and a name. Which it sends to the server as null terminated strings. So in this protocol, this part of the protocol uses null terminated strings. Don't forget, make a note of it, don't forget that strlen of a string does not include the null. Right? So you have to you have to send one more character over to the server, or it's not going to know where the end is. Okay. The server then receives this ID number and product name as strings, and it can... So this part you get to be a little bit creative. It looks them up in a table, and you don't have to be fancy here. You could just make a table within your program that contains these things. Looks them up in a table, and sends back the string authentication approved if the pair is found in the table, or authentication denied otherwise. I didn't mention it here, null terminated strings. Okay? Make a note for those two. Okay, well, just to make it interesting, if the message is authentication denied, the server will let the client try two more times to succeed before sort of giving up. And how does it give up? It closes the listening socket and goes back to, sorry, it closes the client socket and goes back to listen, it goes back to accept a new connection. Okay. So, last thing that happened, if it's working, is the client got an authentication approved message. So the client prompts the user at the terminal again, asking for a password, maximum of 20 characters. This one is sent as a 2-byte number, which is the length of that string, followed by the string itself, and this one's not null terminated. Okay? So this is just... This would be kind of silliness in a real protocol, but it's good practice. So that's why we're doing this. So the length is a 2-byte number in network byte order. Okay, how do you get a number in network byte order? H2N, and we have talked about H2NL before for long numbers, 4 bytes. This is a short, so this will be H2NS. Will be the conversion function that you want to run on the length. in the client, and in the server, the corresponding function is N to HS, right? Network to host short. You want to be sure to do that. Otherwise, your code will be broken when one machine is of one endianness and the other is of a different endianness. So, what?
Why does the server have to convert it back to the short? Shouldn't the client do that?
Okay, good question. So the client converts it from host format to network byte order.
Yeah.
The server is going to need to use it as a number in its native format, whatever it is.
So
it needs to do an N to H operation on it. Okay? Big endian machines, those things are implemented as macros and they have zero cost. Little endian machines actually have to do the swapping around. Okay. Then the server checks the ID and password against another table that you can implement just as a table in the code. And if it's incorrect, it sends back password incorrect, null terminated. Otherwise, it sends back your product key is make up a number. All right, so that's just one single string. Null terminated. All right, so what is this exercise? This is mostly an exercise in A, getting the basic socket stuff working, along with appropriate manipulations of strings being sent over the network. Right? Making sure that you have allocated buffer space, that you don't overflow things, that you appropriately send the nulls, when required, and don't send the nulls when not required. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I think that's clear. Again, we'll let the client try two more times if it didn't work. And when the server is finished, it goes back to accepting. So, just a couple of things about etiquette. I think everybody in here said they were going to do their work on their own machines, right? Nobody's using the lab machines? Anybody? Okay. Well, I guess this point 11 sort of applies to your own machines as well. If you start servers and don't kill them off, you will run into problems like you start the next server and the old one is still there and it's using the socket that you want to use now. Okay? And so the second one fails. So kill off your servers. Use kill operations or control C or something to make them go away. The rule is you will check the return values of all system calls, print an appropriate message, and exit. Also, remember that we talked about how send and receive don't necessarily do all the work that you told them to do. Right? So, figure out what sort of loops you have to put them in to make sure that all of the I/O has happened that you want to have happen. You will be really miserable if you pass buffers that are too small, because the system calls will overwrite other random data in your program, and that will not be good for reproducible results, much less correct results. Okay. So, the last thing is... I don't know if it's the last thing. The last thing about doing this is that, you know, I talked about how you're going to have a host name or IP address as a string from the command line. In order to pass an IP address to bind or connect, you have to have it in this struct sock adder format, right? You can't just pass a string there. It's got to be a struct sock adder. How do you get from one to the other? Well, there's nicely enough a library function called getHostByName that will do that work for you. It is described, well, in one edition of Donahue and Calvert on pages 104 and 105, but regardless of what edition you have, you can look that up and see how to use it. Okay? If for some reason you don't have access to that book, there's also a man page for it on Linux that do the trick. So that'll be good. Questions? All right. So that's sort of the end of the assignment and the hints. Questions about this? Yes.
Should you send the email to people when we're done?
No.
As far as scheduling.
No. You will turn in your. I think it says here. I hope it says. Maybe it never said. It says turn in using the turn in page. Okay? So you'll turn it in using the turn in page like we did for the first assignment. Vic will take a look at them, and then we'll go through a round of arranging appointments for you to talk through with him what's going on. So this is a little over 2 weeks to do this. And I went ahead and made it due at just before midnight instead of 5 o'clock. I don't have any great attraction to having them due at 5 o'clock. It doesn't do me any good. But if you have them done by 5 o'clock, then you have a Friday evening for doing other things, which is perhaps some incentive to have it done early. Okay. All right, that's what I wanted to do today, so we'll stop here, and I'll hand Vic a copy of the assignment so he knows what's going on, and I'll see you on Friday.